You know the old expression, where there's smoke, there's fire. Let's add a wrinkle. Where there's smoke, there's flavor. We love our barbecue in America, and especially that smoky flavor in meats and in lots of other foods as well. Smoking goes way beyond meats. Our next guest can guide us into this land of smoked foods. Stephen Reichlin hosts barbecue shows on Public TV, Primal Grill, Barbecue University, and Project Smoke. He writes books, too, and the latest is called Project Smoke. Stephen, thanks for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
My pleasure. Good to speak with you.
How did you become such a devotee of smoked foods?
It's a logical extension with my work on barbecuing and grilling. I came out with Barbecue Bible in 1998. I've written 8 books on the subject of global grilling, and smoking is the next frontier. I like to say that smoking is the new grilling.
All right, so this is a bit of a departure from grilling. We're not talking direct flame on the food now.
We're talking, exactly. Smoking is a more indirect process. It can be done at a wide range of temperatures, and you can actually cold smoke, which involves no cooking whatsoever, but simply flavoring the food with smoke.
Okay, we'll get to that in a minute. But I'm just curious. When I think about how good smoked food tastes, it just reminds me that when we're exposed to smoke, it coughs and it makes our eyes water, yet it just tastes so good when it's on the food.
Well, it's funny you should mention that. I mean, I think we came to smoking as a species, you know, more than 1 million years ago. It's the world's oldest method of food preservation, and I imagine our prehistoric ancestors gathered around a wood fire to cook meat, and someone noticed that if you were downwind of the smoke, smoke warded off mosquitoes, warded off pests. Meat hung on a stick in front of a smoky fire tended to spoil less rapidly than fresh raw meat. And at the same time, in addition to its preservative properties, it also tasted great.
You mentioned cold smoking, and why don't we talk about that now? Because it sounds like there are lots of different kinds of smoking.
Well, there are. And, you know, one important point I want to make is that while all barbecue is smoke, that is the very essence of barbecue, not all smoked foods are barbecue. So think about Nova Scotia-style salmon, which is a cold-smoked fish. Think about mozzarella affumicata, Italian smoked mozzarella. Again, that is a smoked dish, cold smoked. No cooking involved, and that is not barbecue.
So when it is cold smoked, is it nowhere near the heat? Is it just the smoke has gotten to it somehow?
Yeah, and there are many ways you achieve this. Sort of one classical model is in a smokehouse where you have your food in the smokehouse, and then there's a fire source, you know, maybe 5 or 6 feet away, and the smoke is channeled through a tunnel into the smokehouse. Or if you own, let's say, an electric smoker like a Bradley smoker, there's a cold smoking attachment. The idea, again, is to separate the fire and the smoke source from the food. But there's another way you can achieve the effect if you have a conventional smoker grill, and that is fill a pan with ice, place a wire rack over it, place the food to be smoked on that wire rack, and then you can actually even place another pan of ice on top. But you create a cold environment for smoking.
All right, I've often wondered how some of those things like smoked cheeses came to be. We love the smoked Gouda at our house, but the point is not to get it too close to the actual heat source.
Exactly. And, you know, again, I think originally preservation, and then people became, you know, obviously we don't need to smoke foods to preserve it in this age of refrigeration, but, you know, in all of human history, it's only been the last 100 years that we've had mechanical refrigerators. So it's a pretty mind-boggling notion. I think that just the very universality of smoked foods attests to the importance of the method.
Wow, I never thought of it quite that way. I mean, we've got all these cuisines that date back hundreds, if not thousands of years, and yet we've only been able to cold store it for 100 or so.
Pretty amazing.
That really is. Stephen Reichlin's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He is the host of Project Smoke on PBS, and he's got a new book out called Project Smoke as well. You can talk about smoked food with us here on the Exchange, maybe some things you've smoked and had successes with in your smoker, or notable disasters. Share those too. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Stephen, do you need lots of supplies and gadgets to smoke foods?
You really don't. You know, if you have a simple Weber kettle grill, you've got a smoker. Just set it up for indirect grilling, use half as much charcoal, place wood chips or chunks on the coals, and you have a smoker. You don't need to spend a lot of money to get involved with smoking. $300 will get you an upright barrel smoker, like a pit barrel cooker, a water smoker like a Weber Smoky Mountain, a Bradley electric smoker. But that being said, you know, you can spend a lot of money, and there are some really neat accessories that you can buy in order to smoke. In fact, my book starts with what I call the 7 steps to smoking enlightenment. And step number 2 is the gear that you need. So if you really get into this, you know, you may find yourself injecting foods with a brine or a flavoring mixture. And, you know, an injector comes in handy. You may want to baste the smoking food or barbecuing food with melted butter, so a basting brush is handy. But the bottom line is that this is a very simple method.
Is smoking best done with non-gas devices, though?
Well, you know, I think if for people who are really into it, the satisfaction of lighting a wood fire, smoking over wood, or using charcoal to smoke with wood, those types of smokers really help you enjoy the process of smoking. That being said, you know, electric smokers can be very handy for convenience-driven people, for cold smoking, which is hard to do when you're working with a live fire. If you're cooking bacon, smoking bacon, you want to work at a low temperature, you know, about 165 degrees, and that is hard to achieve if you are working with charcoal again. So there is a place in Stephen Reichlin's smoking world for electric smokers.
Okay. Yeah, I was asking about gas because I have worked with electric
smokers. And gas smokers, the same principle as an electric smoker. They use propane, very consistent temperatures.
I want to know if there are different smoking strategies, for example, for different kinds of meats. Like, would you use a different smoking strategy for fish versus red meat?
Well, you do, because in general with red meat, you're going to cook it as well as smoke it. And with fish, you may cook it like a kippered salmon, or you may not cook it. You know, if you think of Nova Scotia-style or Scottish-style salmon, that is cured in a salt mixture, and it's smoked, but it's not cooked. It's essentially raw.
Yeah, I just noticed as I was turning through the book about you get into the vinegar sauce style of North Carolina, and I was hearing on NPR not very long ago about the Great Divide in North Carolina barbecue. I wonder if there's a part of the country, though, that is better known for smoking than any other, or if there are different smoking styles, too, just like there are different barbecue styles.
Well, absolutely. So if I were going to kind of think about a geographic map of smoking in the United States, I would name Vermont, which is famous for its smoked hams. I would name Massachusetts, which is famous for its smoked bluefish. Maine, famous for its smoked mussels and smoked mussels and scallops. Of course, the Carolinas and Georgia are famous for their smoked pork shoulder, which may be pulled or chopped, served with vinegar sauce or mustard sauce. Texas, where beef is king, barbecued brisket, barbecued beef ribs. Memphis, Kansas City, you know, famous for its brisket, its ribs, its smoked chicken. I guess Kansas City's probably the most ecumenical. And then you got to mention the Pacific Northwest and Alaska for all the wonderful smoked salmon that you get there.
We've been focusing on the protein so far, but the fact is that, as the book points out, and as you've pointed out on the show as well, you don't have to. It's much more than just meats now.
Absolutely, and one of my favorite chapters in the book is on smoked desserts, and that starts with a bacon bourbon apple crisp. Which derives its smoke flavor from two sources. First of all, from the bacon, which adds a kind of salty, smoky flavor that goes great with apples. And then from the fact that you actually smoke roast the crisp on a grill instead of cooking it in the oven. Another of my favorite dishes, it's a little bit of a jaw-dropper, it's smoked ice cream.
What?
And when you smoke ice cream, I give several methods for smoking it. It acquires, you know, this is a food we eat, you know, we've eaten our whole lives, and yet when you smoke it, you sit up and think, my God, I've never tasted anything like that. It's familiar, it's exotic, it's really amazing.
Okay, so I've never tasted anything like that can go one of two ways. I wonder if there are some things that you have tried smoking and went, yeah, that didn't work.
Well, actually, and I've tried smoking just about everything, and in fact, in the vegetable chapter in Project Smoke, you'll find a section called You Can Smoke What?, and it talks about how to smoke everything from mayonnaise to sour cream to mustard to heavy cream to make whipped cream, smoking sugar, smoking salt. But two ingredients that I really didn't have much luck with were smoking chocolate and smoking peppercorns. And I think the reason is both of those have such a strong flavor, and they're kind of earthy, bitter flavors. And there's really isn't smoke that can't really do much. You know, it fights too much with the smoke.
I'm looking at the vegetable chapter right now, a smoked root vegetable hash browns on one page and facing it creamed smoked corn. That one sounds particularly tricky. How do you smoke something that's kind of a mushy consistency to begin with?
Well, what you do first is you smoke the corn kernels. Smoke the corn cobs, cut the kernels off the cob, and that becomes your starting point for the cream corn. And then you're also going to add smoked cheese, which will reinforce the smoke flavor.
How different is the smoke that comes from the different kinds of hardwoods? If you're smoking with alder versus another kind of wood, you know, apple wood or something, how different is the flavor going to be with the same kind of substance that you're applying smoke to?
Well, this flavor is going to be subtly different, but I don't want you to think that if you're smoking with apple wood, you're going to taste apples or applesauce, or if you're smoking with cherry, you're going to taste cherries. It's much more subtle than that. I would say what's far more important than the wood variety you smoke with is how you smoke with the wood, and that is you want to dose it gradually, a little bit every hour rather than using it all at once. Also, it's very important to use seasoned wood, which is completely dried out, as opposed to green wood or a lot of tree bark, which puts out a bitter, acrid smoke flavor.
But seasoned wood, but are you going to do any sort of smoking to it? I mean, a soaking to it first with water just to make sure that it doesn't just go up in flame?
Controversy in the barbecue field. My own position is I always soak wood chips before adding them to the fire because that slows the rate of combustion. I don't generally bother smoking chunks because they burn more slowly, and I never soak whole logs unless I'm trying to emulate the great Carolina pitmaster Ed Mitchell, who likes to soak logs in vinegar and onions the day before.
Wow.
To do what he calls seasoning the logs.
That sounds impressive. Stephen Reichlin is the author of Project Smoke and the host of the TV show on PBS by the same name. You can join us as we talk about smoked food. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Here's a call from Ralph in Mendocino. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hi, Ralph.
Yes. Good morning. An interesting topic. On an Anchor Brewery tour, the person, brewmaster, said that in the process of making beer, they smoke the wort, which apparently is some concoction of barley or something. And the smoking may introduce nitrosamines, which are supposedly a carcinogen. And I was wondering, what about the causal relationship between smoke and cancer?
Well,
and I'll take your response on the air.
All right. Thank you, Ralph.
Thank you, Ralph. To be honest with you, you know, I have seen no scientific evidence that smoked foods are directly linked to cancer. I mean, in fact, if you think about how long smoking has been around, at least a million years, and how diverse it is, if it were dangerous, either we wouldn't be here or we would avoid it like the plague. Obviously, we're talking about a lot light smoke. You can overdo it. And obviously, we're talking about all things in moderation, including smoked foods. But I personally think, I mean, if you think historically, the food preservation properties of smoke far outweighed, that was so important for keeping human beings healthy, that to keep animal proteins safe without refrigeration. So I'm going to look at, you know, the pluses versus minus columns. I see just pluses.
When you're smoking some of these desserts and you like smoked cheesecake, I mean, how involved the process is that?
Super easy. You make a cheesecake, you cook it in a smoker instead of in the oven. I mean, that's basically all there is to it. Ditto with the flan. And I have found that eggs have a particular affinity for wood smoke. Anything like a mild cheese, an egg batter, flan, cheesecake, hard-boiled eggs, they're all great smoked.
All right, we should add there's more, because even beyond the desserts, you have smoked drinks in the back here. You got the Smoky Mary and stuff like that. What's going on here?
Well, smoked cocktails, yeah. About a half a dozen years ago, bartenders started incorporating smoke into their cocktails. They do so by using a tool called a smoking gun. It's a handheld smoker. And smoke gives, you know, alcohol also has a natural affinity for smoke. I mean, you think about the charred whiskey barrels that bourbon is aged in, or you think about something like Scotch whiskey, where the barley is actually smoked over a peat fire before it's mashed and turned into whiskey. So this just takes that concept a little further, infusing smoke into a Bloody Mary or into a margarita or into a Manhattan. These are great ways, just super exciting ways to up your cocktail game.
Smoking can be such a, and I want to remind our listeners again, we're talking about smoking as in cooking, not
yes,
smoking.
Absolutely.
It can be such a long, involved process. I mean, how do you keep it interesting for television? It's almost like watching paint dry if you're standing there.
Well, very interesting question. First of all, many smoked foods do take a long time, like brisket. And for those, we do what are called swap outs. So if you're watching me smoke a brisket on Project Smoke, you'll see it raw, you'll see it go into the smoker, you'll see it halfway through, you'll see it come out and me taste it. Well, that means there are four or five different briskets that have been cooked earlier to different stages of doneness, so we can collapse that process into 8 to 10 minutes. But one of the shows we did in the 2016 season of Project Smoke is called Smoke in a Hurry, and it actually looks at dishes from around the world that are smoked in 10 minutes or less. That would include smoked cheese, for example, smoked mozzarella. It would include a spruce smoked steak, where you, in effect, grill a steak, but you throw a spruce branch on the grill right at the end and place the steak on top of it. You're smoking the steak from underneath.
Wow, there's so much here. And you can apparently add smoke flavor without even smoking at all?
Absolutely, using ingredients like bacon, using pimenton, which is a smoked paprika, chipotle chilies, many, many different options. And if you want to read more about this, my website is barbecuebible.com, and that's BARBECUEBIBLE.com.
Okay, barbecue with a C instead of a Q, as people like to do it now.
Correct.
Stephen Reichlin at Barbecue Bible and Project Smoke, thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
A great pleasure for me. Thank you.
All right, take care.